Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup episode 91. You may note that I am not the normal voice of the podcast who is here to monologue. Instead, it's me, Ben, hosting in place of Alex while he vacations somewhere. But with me, as it often is true, is Colin from Sweden, which did not have daylight savings, and hence we are recording an hour later than we expected to. Say hello, Colin.
We are right on time, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, daylight savings is a scam. And I would not be sad if it died in a fire. So a pretty interesting week of hockey this last week that we'll be covering tonight. Did not look like a particularly good start for the Sharks with a shutout against the bad kind of shutout against the Washington Capitals. And then this team would go on to score 16 goals across three games, playing some pretty bad teams, but that's fine. You've got to do that to bad teams occasionally. But the other thing that has continued to be a trend for this team, besides sort of streaky up and down scoring and goaltending for that matter, is injuries. And we do have injuries to talk about this week because Jonas Donskoy found a way to get hurt yet again this week. And it looked, in fact, for not an insignificant amount of time that Evander Kane, our new top liner, might also spend some time not playing. But turns out he was just having a laugh with folks given the way he played tonight. So real bummer for Jonas Donskoy. If he, as folks are speculating, and I don't know if you got a chance to see his injury, how it occurred, but it looks like a separated shoulder, the way he went into the boards, pushed into the boards, sort of competing for the puck with Ethan Bear, noted scrub for the Edmonton Oilers. And if it is a longer-term injury, obviously that's a huge bummer for Donskoy, but an even bigger bummer for the Sharks, right, Colin?
Yes, it is probably lethal to the chemistry we were finally seeing coming together on our top line.
And yeah, it's worth noting that since the arrival of Evander Kane, the top line has been more or less consistently Donskoy, Pavelski, Kane. I can't think of more than a shift or two that DeBoer has moved somebody around on purpose onto that line in place of Donskoy. He's been very good. At least in terms of driving play, if not scoring goals. Because I think we have to come to, we have to sort of accept at this point that Jonas Donskoy is not going to put 30 goals in the net, no matter who he's with.
But he's carrying the puck and creating so many good plays. I mean, he fills his spot and he creates opportunities for the players he's skating with, and he draws players into him because he loves to dangle when he gets the opportunity. So, yeah. You know, it's not all about points with some players.
Well, I'd hope, actually, as a guy who drives play, that it would be at least, he'd accumulate assists, and he's done a little bit of that. I think more to the point, he's driven maybe more points Joe Pavelski's way. Yep. He's maybe been the pass before the pass before the pass that leads to a goal with Kane's arrival here, or been, the guy who's just not in the right position, on a passing play from Burns to whoever, to Pavelski or to Kane. And that's not to say that, he hasn't been good. He's been excellent on that line. He's still point production wise, probably a second liner really. But on that same token, I mean, the Sharks seem to be constructed as 3 second lines right now, from my perspective. I don't know if you agree with that, as opposed to having a clear top line.
I guess if I'm being a grounded realist instead of a Sharks fan, I'll agree with that. And I mean, it kind of hurts because we see games like some of the games we had this week, and you want to get excited for the playoffs, and then you consider that there aren't really bad teams in the playoffs. So
right.
We're not as strong as we might think we are.
I mean, I think that's an excellent point, right? Again, this is a week where the Sharks lost to the one playoff caliber team that they played. They, you know, Edmonton is garbage. The Red Wings are garbage. And Calgary is a garbage team that thinks it's a playoff team. So it's garbage. That said, you know, one of the things that has always, you know, sort of haunted us as Sharks fans is that the Sharks have had a tendency in their, you know, in the modern era, in the era of, you know, constant playoffs, of playing down to the bad teams, right? And you cannot say that this team, at least from a win perspective, is playing down to the other teams. It may not be playing the best defense, but they are racking up goals against the bad teams. And that leads to some entertaining hockey, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. Goals on the Sharks' favor is entertainment. And some of the goals this week have been downright spectacular. But we're still beating up, you know, the little kids on the playground. And while we see, like, great play from our depth, like, we're seeing Tierney just really fight for the paycheck. And, you know, Goodrow is stepping into his fourth line role. He's looking like he's got a future for DeBoer or whoever's coaching us in the next few seasons. Right. But, yeah, it's always, can we beat Nashville?
Yeah, but every team is asking. I mean, every team is asking that question, right?
Yeah, but that, I mean, yes. And so, you know, can we beat Nashville? It's like, yeah, we could. Can we beat them four times in a row before they beat us four times? Maybe. Can we do that without Donskoy on our top line, without Thornton, and, you know, without somebody else stepping in to fill a top line role? It's going to be tight because, let's face it, Nashville has four deadly lines.
Right. I mean, it's funny you bring that up, because one of the things that I kind of was trying to keep myself, you know, as the injuries have piled up and as I've thought about how long Jumbo's been out, you know, it's been, the resiliency of this team has been impressive, right? Because if we think about the year to date, right? So start with Jones was injured early, and, you know, sort of what happened from there is Dell played lights out for about a month while Jones got healthy.
Yep.
Right. This, you know, Jumbo's now been missed a third of the Sharks season. And Pavelski has largely picked up sort of the secondary scoring.
Yep.
You know, the assists that Jumbo left on the table from there. If we go all the way back, Marlowe left for bluer climbs, and, you know, there was the lamentation of where's the scoring going to come from. And the answer to that was, well, you know, it's going to come from three guys, Tierney, Meyer, and LeBanc, with support from a bunch of other guys too. And then now the question is, who steps up with Donskoy out?
Well, I mean, the problem is, step up and leave what gap behind, and who's filling that gap? Because, you know, you nudge Meyer up and we've got a gap lower in our line. So we've gone from the team that sort of was almost asking to bring on the injuries because, you know, look at our depth. And now we're kind of like, you know, we're good. You can go injure somebody else now, because we're starting to get to the bottom of our bucket.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no help coming from, there's no help coming from the CUDA, right?
No.
The guys who are going to be asked to step up at this point are guys who haven't really shown much beyond being on the fourth line role that they've been given, right? It's Goodrow probably doesn't fill the gap of missing, right? Sorensen doesn't fill that gap. Yannick Hansen doesn't fill that gap.
And there's nobody else that we've, and we traded O'Regan away, granted, so far looking like a good trade. We haven't there's nobody else we've given a look to on the CUDA, right? None of them have gotten even a look yet.
I'll be honest, you know, as a guy who also follows the CUDA, there's nobody there. There just isn't.
Thank you for that little slice of hope.
Well, I mean, right. So where the reinforcements are going to have to come from guys getting healthy on the NHL side, right? Joel Ward working back into shape, Jumbo getting back on the ice. Sorensen or Hansen seizing the spot. That's it. That's what we've got to hope for. That's, you know, depending on how hurt Donskoy is. Now, I want to step back and, you know, talk about one thing that you said, which is, you know, how does this team match up and beat Nashville or, you know, any of the teams that are, you know, closer to the top of the standings, past Nashville in the Eastern Conference. You're then talking about the Lightning, the Bruins. Those guys are the kind of class of the NHL, right? The Jets. We shouldn't forget the Jets because they made a great trade and have been fantastic all year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one thing that's been interesting in watching this team this year up to this point is remember early in the season, there were no goals being scored by the Sharks and they were the best defensive team in the league.
Yep.
That's not true, obviously, anymore. The Sharks are probably still probably in the top third of the league defensively, but that they're not the best. Now they do have the best penalty kill, which has saved their butts on numerous occasions, but overall in terms of goals allowed, they're firmly not mediocre, but not great either. But they might also be just out of the top third in goal scoring. You know, talking about like 12th or 13th, which is probably good enough.
Well, the way I see our team right now, and, you know, I play fighting games, so I'm going to use fighting game terms, but, you know, we're a scrub killer team. You know, we're a team that if some other less worthy team sneaks into the playoffs and goes against us, we're probably going to kick them out. You know, we're going to gatekeep on, you know, the Calgarys, the Edmontons, you know, the teams we played this week. And that also means we do have that shot to be an underdog upset. But you basically have to upset three times if you're going to win a Stanley Cup in this league. And I don't want to say that that's completely out of our reach, because let's face it, we have players who can do some pretty amazing things on their own.
Right.
But yeah, it's just, it looks grim, and it especially looks grim to me considering, you know, what's like the Christmas package unwrapping at the end of the season is the injury report list that comes out of the playoffs.
Right. Well, here's the thing, right? If the playoffs started with teams where they are right now, and there's a pretty good chance that basically what teams are in right now are the teams in 11 games that are going to be in the Western Conference playoffs.
Yep.
The Sharks are going to play the Kings in the first round. Yep. That's more or less a lock unless the Ducks outfight the Kings for that third place spot or the Sharks, you know, crap the bed over the last 11 games, which is plausible.
Yeah. And in either case, Ducks or Kings, that's a Shark knee injury, you know, sometime during that series.
Well, let's hope not, but historically that has been true, except the year that the Sharks went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Yeah. And then in the other conference, we'll get the wild card slots most likely. It's going to be a fight. Basically, the wild card slot is a fight between the Avs, the Stars, and the Ducks at this point, right? More or less that sucking sound that you heard across North America tonight was Calgary Flames playoff hopes going down the fucking drain. And rest in peace, you shitty team. You didn't belong anywhere near the playoffs.
Poor Calgary.
Yeah, well, whatever. So can the Sharks beat the Kings in a 7-game series? Yeah, I think even without Jumbo, they can do that.
Like, minus whatever dirtbag antics cause injuries to our teams, that's a series I'll enjoy watching.
Right, yeah. The Sharks can beat the Kings. The Kings are not that great. Nor the Ducks. Neither of those teams is great. They're on the Sharks level, right?
Yeah, but the Ducks find ways to steal wins. So I'd rather have the Kings.
Sure. I can't argue with that. You know, I think I'd feel marginally comfortable with either matchup. And of course, that also depends on, you know, if Jumbo gets back on the ice and is ready for the first round, which it sure doesn't look like that's what's going to happen.
Okay, but
who knows?
Would you want that to happen? Like, seriously, because let's face it, like a month ago, we were all saying, please, Jumbo, just stay in bed, get better, don't. And then when we saw, like, Kane coming, we're like, please, Jumbo, don't get excited. Don't try to push yourself back on the ice. And now are you saying you want him back?
No, I don't want him to push his way, but he's going to push his way. That's who he is, right? So I have no control over whether he decides that he's going to come back and play. You know, I just have to be sanguine about that. And, you know, as he showed last year skating on one knee, he can still be a pretty solid contributor as long as, you know, he's not asked to play two minutes of a two-minute power play, I guess is the way I would put it. So with that said, I don't think I would mind if he came back. It certainly pushes a guy who probably doesn't deserve to be on the ice back into the press box, you know?
Okay. I mean, sure. But I honestly feel like Jumbo coming back in the playoffs, especially against any sort of Western Conference team that we've got a dirtbag relationship with. I mean, this is his last contract then, because somebody's just going to like tear an arm off the guy. And
I'm not going to worry about that too much. What I'm worried about is, look, we've already agreed that this team probably doesn't match up as is with the injuries they've had against the Predators and Jets. So what is the chance that the Sharks are going to actually be able to make hay in the playoffs involves a couple of guys getting healthy and getting back on the ice. So that's kind of my point, right? Well, so if Jumbo gets healthy and Jonas Donskoy is not permanently, you know, without an arm, then the only chance I feel like the Sharks have to take down a Jets or a Predators is to be healthy, which means if we're going to take this logically, Jumbo's got to be back on the ice and back in the on the roster, back in the swing of things before the playoffs begin, or partway through the first round. If we don't see that, then he's gone. We're not, you know, that's it. That is what it is. So I'm not talking about like what is, you know, going to be what really happens. I'm talking about like what is the best case scenario for this team actually making a run in the playoffs, which, you know, I don't expect it to happen, but I also didn't expect us to go to the Stanley Cup final 2 years ago. So, but even with Kane, right, this team, it takes a miracle to get past the cream of the Western Conference.
Yep. And I kind of feel like you're painting a picture where we're the Sharks are the Black Knight from Monty Python, where we're just losing an arm, losing a leg, and just keep on trucking, keep on trying to bite their legs off while they skate around us. But yeah, like Nash, the Jets are intimidating. They have some weapons, but it's the Predators that I'm absolutely terrified of in a playoff situation, because I mean, we've seen that team's top gear and we've seen that they have that playoff gear that teams need to have to really be dangerous. And we got Kane now, and we looked like Donskoy, Pavelski and Kane were starting to develop that high gear, that sort of every time they get the puck, electricity just starts to pop off. But you know, now with Donskoy's arm popped off, we're back to exactly where we were before we traded for Kane. And you know, I don't like being here. I'm kind of bored of it at this point. And I don't know. I would love to see a Cinderella story, but I think we're just going to want to get through the playoffs with as few injuries as possible and as much money as possible. And you know, shop our way to a new top six.
Yeah, I mean, that's taking a risk, obviously, right? That Kane decides to go to greener pastures, you know, if no noise is made in the playoffs. So, oh,
that's actually, that's a good point. We need to sign him now.
Yeah, I know that's kind of how I feel about it too. But I'm trying to, you know, as I sit here as a Sharks fan and I look at, like, you know, the reality of the injuries versus the also reality of what the Sharks will need to do in the offseason to get competitive or remain competitive, I'm also trying to recognize that, again, this is a team that has basically has 3 second lines. And look,
yeah,
I just described the St. Louis Blue team that the Sharks met in the, you know, second round of the, was it second round that was St. Louis and the Nashville was the third round 2 years ago? That's mm-hmm. the way it went, right? Yeah. So, you know, if the Blues can potentially get there and be a game away, you know, from tying up that series with the Sharks and another game away from advancing past the Sharks, then why can't this team get at least that far, right?
Oh,
and I mean, if Jumbo comes back and Donskoy is actually healthy, then it maybe is a little bit better than that with Kane, right? The Kane addition changed the potential of this team for this year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I hope the whining and dining and just the sweet seduction of Kane is continuing, because like, he has been a piece we've absolutely needed. And the, as much as I hate it, he's also, you know, bringing the grittiness that it's been obvious the Boer's been wanting on his top six. You know, he's been pushing Meyer, it seems, to sort of be that person. He's been pushing Hurdle, who, yeah, Hurdle has the makeup of a power forward, except when you forget that he only has one knee. I am against Hurdle sort of taking more steps into this power forward style that he's been developing, just because you can't go into the boards like he does when one of your knees is just waiting to get destroyed. So I love that Kane has brought that. I love that, you know, we've got this very fast, aggressive player who, it's like, yeah, Donskoy, he's really pretty with the puck, and yeah, Pavelski's really dangerous, but keep your head up, because that other guy's going to come for you.
Right. So, go ahead.
Well, it's worrying to me that every time we seem to get that really nice line chemistry going,
right,
somebody gets knocked out. And I really hope De Boer gets back to whatever he was doing a few years ago, where he was finding those two player pairings that was allowing a third to come in and support in a really good way, because he's going to have to be doing that going into the playoffs, and he's going to have to be able to remix around those pairings fairly regularly if this keeps up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who those pairings settle out to be, depending on, you know, again, who gets back on the ice and who doesn't, and, you know, who's heading off to quiet surgery and who's not. I mean, it does bother me in terms of thinking about whether we're going to see Jumbo at all, you know, by the fact that we're not seeing stories about him moving at full speed and taking parts in practices with non-contact gear on. He should be there right now if we were to be seeing him, you know, before the playoffs begin, or even at the beginning of the playoffs, and we're not, which, you know, I think just confirms that knee injury was devastating.
Yeah.
And it's
you know, the other knee.
I mean, yeah.
He has no more knees left.
Right.
You know, he's stalking through the mean streets of San Jose, you know, jumping ewes and stealing their tendons.
Yeah. Well, it's something we'll just have to watch, particularly as, you know, we get closer and closer to game 82. So speaking of games, let's go ahead and jump in and talk about the four games this week. Much as we probably don't want to talk about the Caps game.
No.
This is a game that, as I've sort of already said, the Sharks did not win. And in fact, the Sharks did not score a goal in. It's not a game I would particularly say was, you know, particularly poorly played from the goal crease out necessarily. I didn't feel like Washington had particularly scary chances more so than the Sharks. They did, I felt, carry the second period pretty hard, and a lot of the third period as well, which is, you know, not what you want to see from a team that is finishing up a homestand, getting sort of outplayed in second and third. But, you know, can't blame it on Jones. He stopped, you know,
stopped what?
24 or 25 shots. And the Washington sealed it with an empty netter at the end.
It's one of those stranglehold games that is really unpleasant to watch because you kind of feel like the team is gut shot and you're just watching them bleed out for, you know, 2.5 periods. So, yeah, there were moments of interesting play, but really just not a good looking game. And, you know, kind of one of those games that you really want to see a surge in the third to, you know, get close.
Right.
And when you don't see that, it's really troubling, especially at this time of the year where you're either cruising to the playoffs and just sort of keeping yourself rested and healthy, or you're trying to secure your slot and you're trying to build those habits that you're going to need to carry into the playoffs. Because there's either teams like Predators and Las Vegas. I mean, oh my God. And, you know, these guys who really just need to keep themselves in the best playing shape they can going into the playoffs. And then there's the teams who need to, you know, climb a mountain, build momentum, and try to ride that momentum as deep into the playoffs as possible. We're the second team. And, you know, when you don't get those late in the game pushes, you don't get those, you know, hard surges where you just sort of take over the game for a little bit to try to pull it back, it's a bad look.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was scoreless through most of two, right? The problem was the Sharks kind of let this game kind of slide on them in the second. I feel like they, you know, early in the third, at least, they did put the pressure on. It was just a little late trying to tie it up. And then they just weren't able to solve Grubauer, which is not a sentence you want to say, but but they didn't. You know, 24 shots isn't terrible in three periods. It's not what you want when you're behind, but
yeah,
it is what it is. You know,
it was just a not wonderful game to watch, but we weren't completely out of it. I mean, that was the nice part.
Yeah, top line had a good game, you know, in terms of just possession. Mostly, I guess I would say. Not everybody else did, but, you know, Pavelski and Kane and Donskoy were, I don't know, I thought pretty good. Kutcher, pretty good. The fourth line, in their limited minutes, I thought were fine. It just, you know, there are games where you're just not going to be able to get past the goalie. It happens. It happens to the Sharks a lot. Good teams are going to beat other good teams. It is a little worrying that it's been a week or two since the Sharks beat a legitimately good team.
Well, I mean, one of the problems I've noticed in this season is anytime we struggle to sort of find the solution to a goalie, you don't see us changing up our approaches around the slot or how we're trying to, you know, stack traffic or, you know, bring passes in from blind angles. We keep trying the same key and we're just like, it didn't work that time. Keep going. And you have to adapt. You have to accept that maybe a team is just, you know, timing things right so that your particular brand of bullshit isn't going to get through. And you have to remix it. And this is on coaching to me. This is where I walk along with you and Alex on, you know, the let's find somebody to teach the Boer how to adapt to gameplay. And
wait, are you saying that it takes more than just juggling your line combinations to find success in the NHL?
I'm afraid I am.
Damn it. Why hasn't somebody told DeBoer this?
Or McLelu. I mean, it's a really unfortunate pattern to be seeing across multiple coaches, but we're not bringing new solutions. We're not trying new solutions. And maybe it's because a coach thinks losing 1-0 but still trying your thing because you're getting kind of close is as good as getting a tie game, just pushing for, you know, a dirty, nasty goal. And, you know, this is ice hockey. The ugly goals count just as much, if not more sometimes, than the pretty ones.
Right.
And you've got to be able to just say, okay, we need to go get a nasty one. And we have ginormous players like Fair, where you just say, okay, buddy, just go camp in front of the goal, be a complete jerk, you know, push your butt into the goalie and try to get some loose pucks going. I mean, geez, put like Fair, Meyer, and Pavelski on a line with Burns just ripping shots at them, and, you know, Ryan or Vlasic sitting at the middle line waiting for the bounce out.
Yuck, I think I might have just thrown up in my mouth there. Jeez.
But come on, you need to be prepared to roll in the mud sometimes. You need to just put some filth out there just to shake something loose.
All right. Well, speaking of putting filth out there, that sounds like the Detroit Red Wings model of putting a team on the ice this year.
Hey.
Ah, see what I did there?
I think you're bagging on one of my favorite non-Sharks teams.
Oh, they're garbage. So let's talk about that garbage team, because they were next into the tank this week. And unlike Washington Caps, they're not good, and the Sharks beat them. So we have that going for us, which is nice. So this game featured goals from a plethora of lines. We have the top line scoring with Jonas Donskoy getting the honors of putting a puck in the net. Eric Fair scored his first NHL goal of the season and his first goal for the Sharks.
First goal in like what was it, like 16 months or something like that? 18 months?
Something depressing like that. Kevin LeBanc finally got a puck to go in the net as well, with an assist from Tierney and another one from Meyer. Meyer got a pretty nice deflection goal on the power play with Bodker ripping a shot from the slot, pretty high up in the slot. And then the scoring was finished off by Chris Tierney, getting a wrist shot on an empty net, I'm pretty sure, passed to him by Pavelski off from Braun. Now, this game, I felt, was closer than the score would leave you to believe.
For, like, parts of the game, sure. I mean, there were times when it looked like these two teams were evenly matched. And then there was, like, the other 38 minutes of the game.
Well, I don't. Yeah, sorry. I don't necessarily mean in terms of like the actual score. I mean, though the score, again, it's, you know, 4-3 until that dagger on the empty net. So, but I didn't feel like the Sharks, you know, really ever pulled away in this game first, particularly at even strength. I thought it was pretty even. Second, you know, this, I feel like I don't think Jones had here a particularly good game.
Oh, no.
Right. And so, you know, look the other way and all, and at the wrong moment. And, you know, this could have been a 4-4 game, as opposed to 5-3. Right. So, I think what was encouraging about this game is, again, Red Wings aren't particularly good, but scoring came from all up and down the lineup.
Yep.
And that's, I think, you know, at least before Donskoy decided to go get his shoulder separated, was something that the Sharks have been doing well since Jumbo's been out, is if not playing, you know, an end-to-end great defensive and offensive game very often, they were getting enough offensive contributions to do better than tread water with Jumbo out.
Yep.
Right. And so a game like this where LeBanc gets off the schneid and Tierney and Meyer do what they've been doing and Donskoy finally pots a goal and Fair contributes is something that, you know, we're going to have to see a lot of over the next week plus if the Sharks are going to go anywhere, right? The problem, of course, being that they're not going to be playing the Red Wings.
No.
Games.
But, like, to me, one of the best plays of this game was the goal on the delayed penalty.
Yeah. which was sad because otherwise that would have been a power play goal.
Yeah, well, but honestly, delayed penalty goals to me, especially when it's not just, oh, there's a delayed penalty on his breakaway, look at him shoot and score, but it was a actual cycle the puck, possess the puck, and get the shot for a goal on a delayed penalty. Because
it was legit.
Yeah, it was completely legit, and it demonstrates like the calm, you know, self-possession to take advantage of a situation and execute, which, let's face it, is something we haven't really been good at for the last like season, well, two seasons now.
Yeah.
So like that made me really happy to see. And it was just such a great, it was such a great power play drill. It was such a great, just, you know, team possession drill. And to get the goal off it, you know, I was like, okay, there's the playoff team. So, you know, some hope there. And yeah, as you said, we were getting good looks from everybody. And yeah, okay, the Wings are having their troubles, but there's still some weapons on that team that you have to respect and you have to play around. So it's not like we just showed up, you know, beat up the smallest kid on the playground, took his lunch money and had ice cream.
But that would be kind of fun.
You really need to work that out somehow.
All right, so yeah, with the playground. Oh, I remember what I was gonna say now. The thing I did like again about the Sharks in this game, especially compared to, I mean, I guess, you know, I've been sort of saying that this is a game that could have been 4-4. I think largely just because Jones, I don't think had a particularly good game. The Sharks absolutely had more dangerous chances in this game by far than the Red Wings did. If you look at kind of where their shots were coming from, they really, really did a good job of getting kind of in the slot, in Howard's face. I'm not sure I would call any, you know, you talked earlier about how you'd like to see the Sharks score more dirty goals, and I'm not sure I would necessarily call any of these goals that. Meyer's deflection was nice and what you would hope to see.
Even Ferris' deflection was nice.
Yeah, that's true too. Ferris' deflection was great. But, you know, not necessarily, I don't think I'd call any of these goals dirty.
Nope.
But the Sharks were going to the dirty areas and, you know, that will pay off. And we did definitely see that in this game. So speaking of dirty, let's now go and talk about
Filthy oil.
Some filthy oil clogged, terrible.
Unlike that clean coal I hear so much about.
Yeah. So the next game was against the Edmonton Oilers, a team in utter disarray and wasting the entry level contract of a generational player in a way that is absolutely hilarious. And this game, like many Sharks games this year, started with a not Sharks goal. Started with really bad player Kajula getting a goal on sort of a cheeky pass that, you know, you don't expect a Zach Cassian to make, but he seems to play particularly well against the Sharks. And then fortunately Tomas Hertl had one of the better games of his career, starting off tying the game a little bit later in the first period with a
of his career
really Come nice on. Shot. Yeah, absolutely. I'd put this game up there, particularly, you know, the way he owned that shift in OT. But we can talk about that. I mean, it's his first 3-point game on the road, which is mystifying to me.
Wasn't that game against New York on the road?
Nope, it was at home.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
I still don't think it's in his top five games, but
okay. I mean, fine.
I mean, pre-two-knee hurdle is still my favorite hurdle.
Yeah, well, he's been gone a long time.
Yeah, yes.
The Oilers pulled ahead on a blast by Klefblom, who had a pretty darn good game for a guy who's had a rough year. Yep. Couture tied it up on the power play with a lovely shot that just straight beat the Edmonton goalie. Yep. Nugent Hopkins deflects the puck to go back ahead yet again early in the third. And then noted sniper Brendan Dillon with a wrist shot to tie the game up in regulation.
Wow, I hope somebody recorded that. Oh, hey.
I mean, I'm recording it. And then, that one shift, Tomas Hertl sort of bullied What's his name? The German named guy. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't remember his name.
Now you have me confused, like the German name guy.
Yeah, he's
That's how we're identifying
Oilers'
this
second
up.
best player, and I can't remember his name right now.
Dreisaitl.
Draisaitl, thank you. Yes, bullies Draisaitl off the puck, kind of just sort of shrugs it over to Couture, who wires a beautiful pass for the one-time shot, top shelf by Hurdle. One of the better shots, but actually both of Hurdle's goals in this game, better shots than he's made most of the year. That's all that is to say. Hurdle likes to miss the net.
Yeah.
And it's still actually having a better shooting season than he's had since his rookie year. There are metrics I saw this week that suggest he should have upwards of 8 to 10 more goals, given where he's taking his shots from.
Yeah.
Which is to say, he's having a really good year getting into position and a really bad year burying the puck.
Yeah, he's oh. Damn it, I needed Alex here so I can make a LeClaire comment and have somebody know who I was talking about.
Well, too bad.
There was this player for Philadelphia back in the 90s who liked to miss the net from like the
Oh,
close
like
the near
Christian
slot.
Eroff. Oh, wait, no, that was not close. Right, got it.
No, Aroff did that from the blue line.
Right.
LeClaire did this from right in front of the net in the perfect slot position. At the same time, the guy was lethal, but you wouldn't know about this. It was 90s hockey before your time.
So this was this was a game where the Sharks left home. They went on the road. It was looking like they weren't going to get any points. I was kind of happy with them to just get one, but really we needed them to get both, and Hurdle saved the day. Unlike the, I mean, actually, I guess I would just say this was another game where the Sharks also, got a lot of dangerous chances. Montoya was okay, not great. Jones was also again not particularly good.
Yeah.
But good enough for the night, I guess.
I
Did you have
mean,
any other
once.
thoughts about this game, Colin?
Well, I really do not like these games where we're carrying Jones. I prefer. I mean, they need to let him get out and snuff a couple homeless guys because he's obviously not calm and in his fully focused mode.
Yeah, that's actually the really interesting thing. The Sharks probably lost his best game this week and then won three thoroughly mediocre Martin Jones starts.
See, I
So
mean,
weird.
yeah, it's just you gotta let Jones get out there and satisfy his hobbies before he plays hockey.
Yeah,
And
I suppose that's true.
again, failure on the coaching. Yes.
So I don't have too much to say about this game except Lucic missed probably two or three
Oh.
really good scoring chances that it makes me laugh every time he fails to score because that contract is such an albatross. And yeah, Edmonton's bad and they should feel bad.
Well, I mean, let's face it, Lucic is a guy. He's a Vancouver born and bred boy who goes to Boston to win a cup against his hometown, and then he returns to Canada and forgets how to play hockey.
Well,
I don't know if that guy's got a home when he finishes his career.
I mean, he's got a home for a while because that contract is constructed in a way where Edmonton cannot get out from under it. So he's going to be playing really bad hockey for Edmonton for a while.
Wait, let me go look at this real quick to
Because they
remind
built the
myself.
contract to be buyout proof. Yeah. So good luck with that. All right. So, speaking of contracts. That's right. That's my transition for this one. Evander Kane showed why the Sharks need to basically put a contract under his nose tonight. When the Sharks moved to tonight's game at the Flames, so third straight not great opponent, third straight win, third straight not great Martin Jones performance. Though I'll be honest, I felt like the shooting, the goals that got past him tonight were. Pretty strong shots to the corners, etc. Certainly, he looked better than Mike Smith did, who let in some pretty horrendous goals. And if only Evander Kane had scored goals in this game, it would have gone to OT 4-4. But fortunately, Kevin LeBanc scored again to get to 10 goals on the year and become the 12th Shark to get to 10 goals on the year. Tomas Hertl got himself number 19, well on his way to getting 20. And Eric Fair scored his second as a Shark on the empty net. What?
I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like somebody else should have gotten that empty net. I mean, because now it's like, oh, look, he scored two goals in 1 week, and it's the first time he's scoring in like a year and a half. What's this great uptick in Fair's play? No.
Oh, no. You know they're re-signing him, right? You know he is DeBoer's prototypical fourth-line center. We're in for at least another year of Eric Fair. I'm not going to get particularly worked up about it.
I mean, it depends. The price could be right. I don't hate him.
Right.
So, I mean, he's not a Brown. He's not a Haley.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of feel like empty nets, especially in games like this where you kind of can choose who gets it. It's just, you know, give him to like Goodrow.
He took the shot when he needed to take it. It went in. The Sharks sealed the deal. What was really interesting in this game, actually, was besides Johnny Gaudreau drawing two penalties by basically diving on one and then embellishing on the second. I don't like that guy. I would love to see somebody bulldoze him into the boards, legally speaking. at some point. But besides being disgusted by that display and the Sharks killing off, a 5-on-3 resulting from that, and obviously, besides Evander Kane's amazing rooster trick, I can't believe Jumbo didn't tell him what he was supposed to do when he scores his fourth. Calgary pulled their goalie with like 7 minutes to go.
we haven't heard you talk about this in a while. And how do you feel about that, Ben?
Well, so here's okay. So you know how I said that sound we heard was Calgary's playoff hopes going down the toilet? Well, they clearly recognized that, right? And decided that it was time to pull out all the stops. And I don't have an issue with them doing it, to be honest. I wish the Sharks had instead made it 7-3, but they scored and made it 6-4. Mm-hmm. What really baffled me, I'll tell you, was when they didn't immediately pull the goalie again.
Mm-hmm.
They actually let it go for about a minute and a half at 6-4 before they bothered to pull Rittich again. And that makes, I'm going to use naughty words now, that makes zero fucking sense. If it makes sense to you to pull the goalie to score goals at all costs at 7 minutes to go and 6-3, then you are committing coaching malpractice by not immediately doing the same thing when it's 6-4 with 4.5 or 5 minutes to go.
Well, you need, I could you say. Need the goals.
What the fuck are you doing?
I agree. Just on the, you know, the one thing I would have done is just put like a third line out there after the goal with the specific orders of get into the offensive zone and force a faceoff. Then you pull the goalie and, you know, you keep pushing on it. But I would have, you know, if there was like a neutral zone faceoff or something that had come out of the play, goalie goes back in.
And there was, right? They scored a goal, so they go back to neutral ice. But they had zone time in the Sharks zone twice within the next minute and a half without pulling the goalie.
Yeah.
And they established that zone time, right? It's not like, they dumped it in. So I don't get it. I don't know what they're – I don't understand.
It's the hockey, and let's face it, most sports have this view of, you know, it's momentum. It's the, oh, we got that goal, so you've got momentum. It's like, you're still down by a couple there, buddy. You're not – when you get within one and you've got pressure – that's momentum. When you're still down by a couple, the other team can make some mistakes and not sweat it too much. So
it just,
you
know, the Patrick Waugh thing, right, was, you know, pull that goalie with 5 minutes to go. You know, if you're down by one, you're down by two, whatever, pull that goalie. And it worked sometimes and it didn't work other times. It's like pulling the goalie. That's what it is. It's a gamble, right? It's not going to work a lot of the time. In fact, there's, you know, more and more folks are starting to take a look at this more rigorously in the stats community, whether it ever makes sense at all, rather than just playing even strength and pushing for the goal that way, right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a gimmick. I mean, I think there are situations where it's a good idea, but specifically, I think that there are teams and certain team compositions that if you have this, it's a great idea. Like if you are a team who can just command puck control and cycle the puck, and most importantly, cycle multiple shots off one shift that's cycling the puck, then yes, absolutely. Pull that goalie. Hell, pull the goalie if you're 0-0 and in the third and you're trying to win in regulation, because your team is built to sort of take advantage of possession and put those shots on net and cycle off the shot and just keep pressuring. And if you get that one extra stick, that can be the right amount. But if you're a team that struggles to score on the power play, if you're a team that, you know, is often trying to leave a defender back to prevent breakaways because you just give bad turnovers, no. You keep your goalie there because you need that final defender and you need to just get your goals the good old-fashioned dirty way.
Yeah, so...
And we're the second team, and obviously Gallagher is the second team too, even though Johnny Gaudreau cannot go in front of the net and get dirty goals, the guy would get destroyed.
Speaking of dirty goals, though, this was a game where the Sharks did put a couple of pretty, you know,
yeah,
tough, greasy goals, as they might be called. So Kane kind of got his own rebound and put one in. Tomas Hertl poked one out from between Mike Smith's wickets.
Yep.
Kane also got a tip on a nice play for one of his four goals. And you know, that's kind of what we've been looking for in some sense from these guys. Calgary's done probably at this point. They're not going to be catching up with LA or Anaheim at this point, and they sure as heck are not going to catch up with the Sharks. I think the most worrying thing about this game is that the Sharks were down 3-2. And it didn't look particularly good or close for the good guys. The Flames came out in the second and looked like the stronger team for a bit of it, and then all of a sudden everything changed. And from there forward, it looked pretty much all Sharks. But there's not too much I think we can take away from this, you know, in the sense that, again, Calgary's not that good. I'd like to see Jones play a stronger game the next one out. Of course, you know, the next game up is tomorrow, which means we'll probably see Aaron Dell there against Vancouver. And then Tuesday, the Devils come in to visit the Sharks, and we'll probably see Jones back. I guess Jones has started 10 straight at this point.
If you say so.
That's what I think they were saying that during the broadcast tonight. It might be a good time to maybe give him more than another game off, but it sure looks like we've got the old DeBoer kind of riding Jones really dies. Which, again, by the way, the fact that this is happening now, I feel like confirms that Jones had a real injury earlier in the year. And that's why we saw more Dell, was that they had legitimate concerns about his health. So after go ahead.
Even more reason to get Dell some time right now, because we do not want to break what we've just newly repaired.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other alternative is, you know, Dell hasn't looked particularly good of late, and he might be hurt. So that might be also why we haven't seen very much of him. And then on Thursday, the Golden Knights come in. For a first versus second, what would be right now a first versus second battle. We'll see what happens over the
next couple. How did this happen? How are they doing so well?
They took the best second liner off of every team in the league. That's how.
So what you're telling all the Sharks fans out there is the Sharks are well built to take the cup.
I did not say the Sharks had the best second liners in the league. They had three second line.
Our second hopes liners. And prayers are answered. Ben has told us that we can win a cup with our team of seconds.
Sure, I did. So yeah, Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday this week we have three games. So a little bit less packed than this week's. I wasn't going to do 3 stars because I do think that's a lame gimmick. And I hope Alex listens to this and hears me say that. but I do want to recognize at least one player this week. There's a guy who the Sharks fan base gives a lot of shit for a reason I don't understand, and that's Dylan DeMello. And over the last couple of weeks, Dylan DeMello has been becoming more and more the point guy on the second power play, which is good because Vlasic is bad on the power play and shouldn't be there. And over the last 7 games has coincidentally scored 7 points. 7 points in 6 games for DeMello. So I feel like DeMello has been playing pretty awesome, and I just wanted to put that out there and say shut up to the people who think he's bad because he's not. That's it. Colin, do you have anything you want to share or any players you want to call out? I mean, obviously we could call out Hurdle for 5 points in 2 games, and particularly I guess he had a rough game against the Caps and got sat for a while, so that's good for Hurdle. We could obviously call out Kane for his Kane game. Anybody else you'd like to recognize?
See, I mean, Kane, I really wonder what the sort of Buffalo rumor mill was on about with Kane, because he's just come in and gelled, and he just seems to find his space on the ice. And more importantly, and this is something like the younger guys that we've been pulling up over the last couple of seasons have really struggled to do, he lets other people have their space too. He's not, you know, crowding on people. If you remember LeBanc's early games with Jumbo, he was tripping all over Jumbo and Pavelski all the time. But Kane has just slid right in. He's found his ice. He's, you know, finding the passing lanes to his skating partners. And yeah, I gotta wonder what's up with Buffalo, because Kane's been great. As far as recognition, I mean, we've called out everybody, I think, who's doing a good job. My former favorite rookie, Goodrow, is finally showing that promise that I was harping about 2 seasons ago. But otherwise, no. I'll call out the future good coaching of DeBoer. I will call that mythical unicorn from the woods and let it know that it's time that it can come out and show us that DeBoer can react to the situation and, you know, find that right combination of seconds to get the job done. And there's no shame in a dirty gold DeBoer.
I don't think he specifically like coaches against those dirty goals. I'm just not sure this is a team that is constructed of guys who want to go to the dirty areas to score those goals often, right? Though, you know, the last 3 games, they've had a lot of pretty good close-in dangerous shots, and some of them went in. You know, against Calgary, they also gave up a lot of those. So, unlike the previous 2 games, so that is worth noting as well.
I'm hoping Alex has been watching closely these games, because I actually want him to give his breakdown of the defensive cycle, because that's one part of the game I'm still just not great on identifying, and he was making some good call-outs earlier this season. He's not going to listen to this, so he won't hear me say nice things about him.
Oh, he does sometimes listen. We'll know if he listened if he gets mad at me about the 3 stars of the week thing. So this has been our 4-game retrospective on this week of the Sharks and talking about the Donskoy injury and the Kane game. You can find us on Twitter at Circling the Cup. That's usually me. Like 90%, 8% of those tweets come from me. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. Usually I'm posting about our podcast, or Alex is posting shirtless pinup posters of different Sharks. You can find our podcasts at circlingthecup.com or on iTunes, where you can subscribe, and please do subscribe. And finally, we do appear on several aggregators on Android if you're looking for us there. So again, we've got 3 games coming up this week. New Jersey is pretty good. Vegas is obviously good. Vancouver is not. So fortunately, that Vancouver game is tomorrow, because it would be nice to see the Sharks have a four-game winning streak before they go in and face two good teams. But this is a good litmus test to see, you know, with Donskoy out and some guys being asked to step up, whether they can, you know, the Sharks can hang in with a couple good teams. So we'll see you all next week. And say goodbye, Carl, Colin.
I'll say we need wins this week, because next, the week after, we're playing the Preds and we're playing Vegas back-to-back.
Yeah, it is interesting. By the way, one last point I forgot to say, that I guess we don't play Anaheim or LA the rest of the way. So we don't have any more head-to-heads against the teams that we're directly competing for a spot with, but we certainly do, as Colin has mentioned, have to play some pretty darn good teams to, you know, the rest of the way, including, and it's weird to say this, the Avalanche, who have been streaking, you know, Dallas and the Golden Knights a lot in Nashville, etc. But hey, St. Louis is sprinkled, and Chicago are sprinkled in there too, so at least there's some gimmies. Anyway,
we'll see.
This has been Circling the Cup. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next time, and go Sharks.
Go Sharks. Bye, everybody.